Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning. Spent time with a couple of different families this week dealing with the loss of loved ones, and then seen an article by a piece of a book from an author by the name of David Brooks, and he talked about the difference between resume virtues and eulogy virtues, that there's two different types of virtues, and again, that being resume and eulogy virtues. Then resume virtues are sort of the things about what you did, your accomplishments, the kind of career you had, the degrees that you earned, the big things that you accomplished in life, the stuff that you read about in newspapers in that obituary section. But the eulogy virtues, those are the things that we actually talk about at funerals. Like we'll mention what you did, but the eulogy virtues are like your character, your integrity, your loyalty, your love, your faith. And the reason that we talk about those things is because those are the things that we truly want to be remembered by. We don't really want to be remembered by where we work, which is kind of crazy because we spend so much time at work, but that's not really how we want to be remembered. We don't really want to be remembered as just the employee or the employer of a certain place. We want to be remembered by the employee or the employer, the kind of person that we were or that we are. Like, those are the eulogy virtues. And so we're going to keep going and picking through here in Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, the writer is eulogizing several different people, that they're being remembered certainly long after their death, but that's the idea of a eulogy, right? You're remembering, and they are being eulogized. And the main character trait that is on display is faith. That's what's happening here in Hebrews 11. And so the chapter starts off with a working definition of faith. And we've seen it several times over the last few weeks. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And again, I want us to remember that what that is saying is faith. Faith is not just a mental agreement about something that doesn't seem real. Like it seems just a little too outlandish, or it's just a little bit too crazy going on, so you just have to take it on faith. A lot of times, like, faith gets a bad rap in our world because people seem to think you have to check your brain at the door in order to have faith. And I think that's sometimes why there is that proposed tension between faith and science, because people seem to think science includes sort of the intellect in your brain, and faith doesn't. That's not the case. That's not how it works. Faith is assurance and confidence. You don't check your brain at the door if you have to have your brain to have assurance and to have confidence in something. This is really like when our brain and our heart and the whole being of our soul is in agreement that there is something going on here that is beyond what I can see with my physical eyes. And that is the faith that is being talked about over and over again here in the book of Hebrews, but especially in the chapter 11. And one of the ideas that we're going to look at this morning, and it's sort of one of those big ideas of faith, is that idea that between the present and the promise, and that idea that God's people always act on the promise, that people of faith act upon the promise and not our present, I guess is how I want to say it, how we feel in the moment. Faith understands that things aren't like they are supposed to be right now. Like, when we look around in the world, for instance, last Sunday night at Jay, they prayed that this country would return back to the faith that it once had. I think that's a good prayer to have. But I'm also good with fresh expressions of faith. like whatever it takes for us to be more Christ-like, to be more Christian-like, that's what we should do. But we look at our present and we see this isn't how it should be, right? We can see that. That's obvious. The world is not how it should be. But faith doesn't get hung up on the present, because faith is looking at the promise of knowing that it's not always going to be like this. Like they said, that there's a day coming that whenever all of these things that are broke are going to be fixed, when all the wrongs will be made right and everything is going to be just how it's supposed to be, but we're certainly not there yet, right? We're in the present, but that is the promise. And faith is what gets us in between. As we travel in this world sort of between the present and the promise, it's faith that holds our hand and keeps us comforted. Now there's certainly lots of people that we could look at in Scripture that have had to deal with the in-between, their present and the promise, but Hebrews spends some time with Abraham, and so that's what we'll do this morning as well. Hebrews 11:8 says, "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going." So again, faith is between the present and the promise. So let's think about Abraham's present for the moment. In this moment that's recorded back in Genesis 11, that there's nothing in there to indicate that Abraham did anything that warranted the call of God in his life. We don't see anything that Abraham did that God said, "Man, right there is my guy. That right there is the guy that I want to call." But we don't see that there's nothing there. In fact, if you read places in like Joshua, it talks about that Abraham came from a pagan land. I think we could assume that he probably worshipped other gods besides God, that he worshipped as a pagan worshiper. Now, I'm making that assumption, and I certainly could be wrong. But culturally, where Abraham came from, that makes sense, that he wasn't even worshiping God or just God when he called him. And yet still, God called him. And God says, "Leave your home. Leave your country, leave your inheritance, and go to this place that I'm going to show you." Now God's call is going to go on further a little bit later into Abraham's present, and he says that I want you to go, and it's going to make a nation out of your descendants. You're going to be the father of a nation. That you're going to go and have so many descendants that they're not going to be able to be counted. And it's sort of ironic, because at this point, Abram is 75 years old, and he has zero kids. He's got a family, he's got a wife, he's got a nephew, he's got parents, obviously a brother or sister to have a nephew, but he has no kids. And sort of the irony of it, again, before Abraham was Abraham, he was Abram. And Abram sort of means father. And so God later is going to rename him Abraham, which kind of means father of many. And so maybe to sort of modernize it a little bit, like Abraham is the man. Like Abraham is the father, the dad. He is the ultimate father for this nation that's going to be born. And again, he still has no kids when he's given these names. And so that's sort of the irony of what's going on in this moment in Abraham's present. He hears God. Maybe for the very first time, he hears the voice of God. That's all that we have recorded. So let's assume the first time he hears from God, God says, "Leave your home and leave your country and your inheritance." And later on again, it'll be his family that's going to be part of it. But go to a place that I'm going to show you, and I'm going to bless you with so many children that you won't even be able to count. And again, it's not the normal time for people like Abraham and Sarah to be having kids. And yet, Abraham goes. He does go, and the only way
to describe it is how the author of Hebrews describes it, by faith. The only way to describe what's going on with Abraham and Sarah, to describe it is by faith, because it doesn't make any logical sense. Unless Abraham puts his full faith in God, and all of a sudden those pieces start falling into place and his move starts making sense. But if you take faith out of the equation, it doesn't make any sense at all. And this faith is explained by two phrases that are followed by faith in Hebrews. It says that Abraham went by faith, and that Abraham went not knowing where he was going. He didn't know, and we sometimes maybe we gloss over reading that, but just think about those two phrases, that even though he didn't know, he went. And I think that tells us that full obedience doesn't require full understanding. But we really want the full understanding, right? That's what we really want. Most of the time, we want to know where we're going before we start heading out. We want sort of God to not just be with us or give us the direction, but show us everything that the path is going to entail. But before I even take one step on this path, I want to know every in and every out. Sort of, can you show me a preview of what the future looks like, and then I'll follow you, God, on this path. We want to know before we go, but that's not faith, right? Full obedience and faith do not require full understanding. And Abraham stepped out on faith. He went before he even knew he had a destination. It's sort of like Abraham said, I don't know where I'm going, but I have a guide, and that guide is God, and so I'm good to go. And so the writer of Hebrews in verse 9, chapter 11, he says, by faith he went to live in a land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. And again, if faith is living between the present and the promise, we notice the tension here. Abraham has been promised a land. In other words, this is Abraham's land. But you'll notice that he has to live in the land that is his. He's got to pitch a tent. He's living as a stranger and a foreigner in his land, because there is a tension between the present and the promise. That's sort of how life works, right? The promise hasn't happened yet. The present is right now. And so there's this tension between the two. But because Abraham is having to live in his own land as a foreigner, and so many times I think that's true for us as well. Now sometimes I'll tell some on myself. We like to sing that song, that this world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. But you know what happens is we often set down pretty deep roots at this place, and we're not ready to go. For myself, when it came between my heart and like some guy just sneezing at the wrong time, I was pretty scared to die. Like I did not want to go. And so you come back and I wonder myself, do I believe those words when it came down to brass tacks, that this world is not my home and I'm just passing through? Because most of the time it sounds like we want to stay a little bit longer. It's more like, Jesus, can you hang off a little bit longer? Just keep me around. Abraham understood that tension between the present and the promise. And I think I see in that verse there that this tension is passed on to the next generations, because it wasn't Isaac that got to plant roots in the promised land. It wasn't Jacob that would get to plant roots in the promised land, nor really their kids or their grandkids. But about 400 years later is when the Israelites finally got to come back to that promised land and begin to set up roots. And even then, at best, they had to work for that land. And at worst, they had to kill a bunch of people. Because there's a tension between the present and the promise, which should tell us that the promise is going to take patience. And that's a lesson that Abraham knew as well, that the author of Hebrews focuses in on one of the details about patience that takes about 25 years. Abraham and Sarah, they've heard the promise of the Lord, and the promise was go. And if you go, I'm going to bless you, and the blessing will be in the form of a son that's going to bring nations to God. That's the promise. And for 25 years, there's been no son of promise. They've had to wait for 25 years, but you look at Hebrews 11:11, and it will say it this way in the way of patience. It says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. And so even Sarah, not just Abraham, but Sarah is being highlighted here. Sarah, who was past the age of childbearing, if you read Genesis chapter 11, you'll find out that she's 90 years old when she's going to go ahead and have her son. The writer of Hebrews says that she was past the childbearing age. And he's not saying, seems like, you know, she was pushing 50, so you know, she was getting on up there, so this really wasn't probably going to work out. No, he's saying it was inconceivable. Maybe that's where that word comes from, inconceivable. It wasn't even a remote possibility. She was past the age of childbearing. She had to be enabled by something besides her to have children, and she considered him faithful who had made the promise. Now, it was impossible for her to get pregnant, but we know nothing is impossible without God, and what the author of Hebrews was saying is that Sarah knew that. And maybe we kind of think the author of Hebrews is a little bit generous, is being a little bit nice to Sarah, because if we go back in Genesis, we're all saying, hey, Mike, we know she laughed, right? Sarah laughed. When she heard the news, she laughed in doubt of God. That's sort of how we understand and interpret that story. But let's look again at Genesis chapter 18. The visitors had come and they've told Abraham that we're going to come back in a year around this time. And when we come back, you're going to have a baby boy bouncing on your knee. And that's what it says. And then it tells us that Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. So Sarah's not even a part of this conversation, right? She's just overhearing it. And it tells us that Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years, the way women had ceased to be with Sarah. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure? And so a lot of times we're like, well, there you go. Sarah laughed, and the Lord even calls Sarah out on this. He says, why did you laugh? And she says, well, I didn't laugh. And they're like, yeah, you did. We kind of have this supernatural power that we heard you laugh. Now, you may have been just laughing to yourself, but we know you laughed. And today, we sort of use that and think that Sarah laughed in the doubt of God. But the author of Hebrews says that faith here is the understanding, and that God can do the impossible. So maybe Sarah didn't laugh in doubt of God. She laughed in doubt that she would actually have this pleasure, as Scripture says. Scripture doesn't say that Sarah doubted God. It says she doubted that she would have this pleasure. Well, easy for me to say as a guy, I guess, right? But sort of, can I actually get through this? Can I enjoy this? She doubted herself, but the author of Hebrews indicates that she did not doubt God, because she was, as it says, considered him faithful who had promised that. She considered God faithful. So I guess in other words, in the moment of this news, the way that I understand it from the author of Hebrews' perspective is that Sarah looked back over the last 25 years of her life, and that God had called them out of their land that they grew up in, had led them to this new place, this new destination, and God had taken care of them on every step of that journey. Sure, now there had been a time or two where they kind of broke off and they tried to do things their own way without God, but God had still remained faithful, and he still worked with them, and he still loved them. And so when Sarah looked back at 25 years, she saw that God was faithful. And so she still considered him to be faithful, and so she had faith that God could do the impossible. I like how the writer of Hebrews writes and understands that story, because it may be impossible without God, but in faith we understand that nothing is impossible without God. And so then verse 12 focuses them back on Abraham. It says, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. The author here doesn't pull any punches. He calls Abraham as good as dead. And again, this is Father Abraham. This is the father. This is not just going back to your dad. This is the father of the nation, the father of the Israelites. And the writer here says that Abraham is as good as dead. Sort of another way of saying at this moment, he's worthless, right? And we get that. Like you imagine any time that you've heard or you've used so-and-so is as good as dead, like that's offensive, right? There's never been a good time that you've said so-and-so is as good as dead, and you used it in a positive connotation here. The writer is saying that Abraham is as good as dead, and that sounds harsh, but that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying that Abraham was as good as dead, that he couldn't do these things on his own. He was 100 and whenever he had his son of promise, he was as good as dead. And in this one verse, I think we find the reflection of all of our faith stories. When you gave your life to Jesus, at that moment that you gave your life to Christ, you submitted yourself to his will and his lordship and his power in those waters of baptism. In that moment, what you said was, I'm as good as dead. Because by myself, I can do nothing. I'm as good as dead, but God stepped in and raised you to a new life. And so now I'm a new creation, and I'm not dead yet, right? Not dead yet, though I was as good as dead. God can still do some amazingly powerful things. An understanding like that gives me hope, because a lot of times I find myself putting my trust in the things that are fleeting. Trust in my own abilities. Like I still feel like I can do some things that I probably can't. For instance, when Megan and Thomas were moving a few years ago, they had this big sectional, and that's what we came to move. Except we all kind of got to talking and got to moving other things. We weren't moving that sectional, and I wanted to move. That's what we came to move. So I took it upon myself that I could move that sectional. I couldn't, and the hernia later tells me that I couldn't. I needed everybody's help. But sometimes that's what we do. We put our trust in things that aren't going to last. But whenever we can put our trust in God, a God that can bring dead things back to life, that right there should change everything, because faith gives us hope. Faith, in fact, it lives on hope. If we just turn back here, Hebrews chapter 6, the writer says, when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable character of his purpose, he guaranteed it with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge might have strong encouragement to hold fast to the hope set before us. And so we see how much God wants us to understand that we can hope in him. He gives us his promise and his oath. And so he can't change because he can't lie. He's given a promise and he's given an oath. And that means that we can trust it because God can back it up. God's not going to age out of that ability or that activity. He's not going to come to the point where he looks at you and he says, yeah, I know I promised that, but I'm getting a little old now, and I can't fulfill that. God's never going to say that. God's never going to work like that, because when God makes a promise, you can count on that promise. You can have faith in it. Abraham walked in faith. He was full of hope, and that's because his eyes were on the promise and not on the present. He kept his eyes looking forward. We should do the same. Verse 10 tells us that Abraham was looking forward to the city that has foundation, whose designer and builder is God. And so while Abraham had to live as a nomad, while he had to pitch his tent in different places, what he got to see when he looked up in faith was there was a promise, and there was a city with foundation that was built by God. That is God. That has God as the foundation. And while Abraham pitched his tent his whole life other places, he really pitched his tent on the promise of God. And we should do the same. Well, when God is your foundation, that there's nothing in this life that can shake you. You can have concerns. You may have lots of issues. You can have hopes and desires for this world. But nothing in the present can shake you, because we know that the promise is still coming. And so we should have the attitude of come what may. Right now, I know that God is faithful. And again, when God is your foundation, nothing can shake you. And we know that it may not happen yet, but we know that the promise is not just a will be fulfilled, but I believe God is in the process of fulfilling those promises right now. And so until it's in its fullness. And so this morning we're going to kind of close and finish off with just a couple of questions. And neither one of them I'm going to look at too deep this week. But number one, what promises have you made to someone else, and how have you followed through on your promises? And sort of think about this. Sort of how we deal with promises here on earth in this life, I think, is how we sort of understand how God deals with promises. And so if you've had folks or people that make promise in your life and they're not so good at keeping those, you're probably going to have a hard time understanding God and how he keeps his promises. So think about what promises you've made to someone else and how you followed through on that promise. And then what promise has God made to you that gives you hope? Probably promises, right? Because I think here's the thing. I don't think we can really navigate life, not the way I think that God intended us for, with joy and peace and patience and goodness and all of those things. We can't do that unless we have faith. But when we have faith, not in the present, but in the promises of God, I think it changes how we deal with our present. It changes what we do every day when our eyes are fixed upon the promise, not just on the present of this world. And so this morning, as we finish up, if you're in need of prayers, if you're in need of getting back on the rock to stand on those promises, we encourage you to come. Maybe this morning you're here and you're ready to be baptized. The baptismal waters are also prepared for that. Whatever your need may be, please come as together we stand and we sing.